Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. My guest is Chris Check. Joe Heschmeyer no longer works here. There was a small incident. We had to let him go. I'm just kidding you, Joe. A little bit of broad humor sometimes is acceptable, I think. I mean, we're Catholics. We're not Puritans.
There you go.
Yeah. There you go.
Very broad-minded of you.
Thank you. We were talking about Taylor Swift and the sexual revolution when we went to the break. But and it comes about because all three of us read an absolutely brilliant and wonderfully written article by Patricia Snow in First Things, came out in October. And Chris said, let's talk about this on the flannel panel. Because we've talked about Taylor Swift before. Oh, and I forgot to bring the mailbag in here. Dog nugget. Do you have it on your computer? That letter?
I can probably dig it up.
If you could, yeah, because I promised we'd do mailbag. But we talked about Taylor Swift before, and I think there's something particularly, it's almost a do-it-yourself comedy. It's ready-made comedy. Three older gents talking about Taylor Swift, but there is something.
I'm technically still in my 30s for another 2 months. I don't want to just point that out.
Are you older than Taylor Swift or are you her age? I don't know how old she is.
We were born in the same year.
You were?
Oh, no, that's not right.
Well, you've done well too, Joe. Don't worry about it. You've done well too.
I was born in 1989. I was born
in 1985. So here's the thing. I think at the root of what Patricia Snow is pointing to in her First Things article, Taylor Swift's Sexual Revolution, is that at the root of Taylor Swift's engagement with her female fans, $2 billion worth of whom came out to, you know, or they spent $2 billion to come out and see her during that big Eras tour. At the root of it is hurt and a need to express hurt and rage over the failure of relationships with men. I think if I understand Patricia Snow correctly, what she's saying is, Taylor Swift is like one step away from making the connection that she needs to make, or that women of the post-sexual revolution era need to make, which is the problem is not me. The problem is this is not how we're supposed to live. This sexual revolution as liberation idea is a stupid idea, and it hurt me. And I need to let go of that idea if I want a fully human life.
Yeah, the article made me more sympathetic to Miss Swift and her fans than I was. Can I just give a quick sample here of Patricia Snow's prose? Because she is a master, and she says exactly what you said there. This, in a nutshell, is the dynamic driving Swift's Eras tour. Consensus-seeking young women, young womanhood, coalescing around another young woman's truth-telling. The concerts are vast exercises in collective remembering and purging, tumultuous occasions of female catharsis, as all those pent-up, prescribed emotions, petulance and rage, disabling anguish and persistent desire, sweep the amphitheater where Swift performs in a spectacle of passionate solidarity, ratified by the ubiquitous talisman of the friendship bracelet.
Yeah, that's Patricia Snow. Nice work. But my point was, and I mentioned some women, and there was more that I would have. I wish I had mentioned Angela Franks, because she's a great theologian who writes on these very topics. But lots of Catholic women, it seems to me, when you encounter what Catholic women are doing kind of in the public sphere these days. Tracy Rowland,
a great piece on...
Oh, yeah, when you said a woman in Australia, that's who I first thought of.
But by the way, who's coming, if you live in New Hampshire, who's going to be speaking at the College of Thomas More in a short while. Tracy Rowland, who had a piece on what we need now, she makes the point, If we all this other stuff is way downstream from human anthropology. If we don't get marriage right, if we don't get the sexes right, why are we even having a conversation about immigration, for example?
Yeah, there's nothing to save. There's no there's no culture if there's not
anthropology, a proper anthropology.
Right, and of course that this is all part of a conversation that certainly got its. Its focus, its focal point was the person of John Paul II, with his theology of the body, but also with his whole theology and representation of the Catholic faith in a modern context. But the idea that the body speaks a language, that there's that what we do with our bodies communicates meaning, and that the sexual act has a nuptial meaning. That is, what it means. When two people engage in the sexual act is union, and it's a union that is clearly connected to children and to lifelong stability. And having separated that act from its meaning, what we're doing is hurting ourselves and we're hurting our children. And I think that if I were to take what I took from Patricia Snow's piece, I think you took this too, Chris, based on some of what you said. At root, it's this. The sexual revolution is abuse of young girls and young women.
Yes.
That's what it is. That's what the sexual revolution is.
She calls it soft abuse. She said, like, the popularity of the Me Too movement was focusing on the really extreme cases of, you know, sexual violation. And the popularity of Taylor Swift is focusing on soft abuse, which she says, she defines it as the run-of-the-mill bad behaviors and casual cruelty routinized by the sexual revolution, that once you make this whole aspect of human relationality sort of transactional and unsentimental and shallow and detached from marriage, detached from children, detached from unity, that opens, as she calls it, a Pandora's box. So, yeah, I think it's one of those things where I think as Catholics, we should have probably been better on the Me Too movement and realize, like, even if we're coming from very different places in the critique, we both see this kind of behavior as atrociously wrong. And so even if the person, you know, speaking out about it is someone I agree with on like 5% of things, this is one of those things. And likewise with Taylor Swift's music, whether you love or hate any number of other things, I think we can both agree, yeah, this is really bad. This is something that's really missing.
All of this,
something human.
All of this enabled by the contraceptive pill. And here has been a big failure, I think, on the part of the church, especially in the post-Humana Vitae time. And I'm not blaming Paul VI. He said what he said, and he said it eloquently and beautifully. And by the way, I think one of the best books Todd Aguiloro, who runs our press, ever published in his career here, which I think is about 10 years or 11.
I know.
Also, what's it called? The collection that
don't
we did.
Don't ask me things on the air.
It'll come to me in a second.
It's the contraception book.
Inseparable. It's
yeah.
Brilliant, my friends. If you want to understand how contraception is central to this tragedy, that the victims of which are young girls, the biggest victims of modernity. Two other people on your list are our dear friend Rose Sweet is excellent on this, and Jennifer Morse. Jennifer Roback Morse and Deborah Savage
and many women. Yeah. There are just this. There's this whole. I mean, I would even go like the UN ambassador, the Harvard.
Marianne Glendon.
Marianne Glendon is kind of the one of the early voices to get it. And I just feel like, you know, we talk about the Catholic intellectual tradition and all that. It's good. It's important. It's so many great things. But when it's alive the way it is alive now among fully mature, brilliant Catholic women, I just feel like we are in a moment, a special moment of a real contribution. But I come back to my point, Joe. How do we get these women to be heard? You know, they are not confused. You know, you don't read a Patricia Snow and go, just another confused modern person. You go, oh no, she's onto it. She's got it. This is it. How do we get people to not see it as, oh, the church wants you to not have fun in the bedroom? You know, like this stupid, childish, adolescent response to the Catholic message, but to have a mature engagement with Catholic women.
I think you first, you know, you solicit the desire for something else. Like you can't offer a solution to something someone doesn't realize is a problem. Like if I say I'm in the breath mint business and I'm speaking to a bunch of people who don't realize they have bad breath, you have to find a way into bringing up, oh, some have thought your breath doesn't smell like it should. So likewise, if what you have here is a deep melancholy and sadness around sexuality, that people aren't connecting to the sexual revolution. They're not realizing, like...
Is it that, or they do recognize that their breath is bad, but they continue to, you know, chew on garlic or whatever? I mean, I think actually they recognize the problem, or they all feel very sad. I think the saddest people in the world right now are like teenage girls. I think many of them.
There's evidence for that.
Yeah, I just think they're
right. And actually even a little younger than teenage girls.
Yeah, like 11, 12 or whatever.
Girls,
by the way, parents. I mean, honestly,
love those girls.
The devil is very incremental. And, you know, the iPhone so your friends can talk, and then they start looking at Instagram, and then the jealousies start and everything, and then they're victims along with Taylor Swift.
And I'm going to say something, I know it's not popular to say it, but their parents get divorced and their father leaves them.
Yes.
Fathers, don't leave your girls.
Yes.
Don't leave your girls.
Yes.
I mean, don't leave your children, but in this world...
Don't leave your spouse.
Yeah, don't leave your spouse and tell yourself it's okay. You know, it's better this way. It's not better this way. The best thing is for you to be in the home with her and affirming her beauty especially before God. I think we got to take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about a related tax issue. So we'll move from Taylor Swift to taxes right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more in step with the liturgical rhythm of the church on the web at magnificat.com.
EWTN Global Catholic Network is the largest religious media network in the world. 11 global TV channels, English and Spanish radio networks with over 500 AM and FM radio affiliates, one of the largest Catholic websites in the world, dozens of podcasts every week, social media, electronic and print news services, and EWTN publishing. EWTN is the global Catholic network. For more about EWTN, visit EWTN.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers, author of a whole bunch of great books, including The Eucharist is Really Jesus and a bunch of other declarative sentences. Do you want to give us any of the other declarative sentences, Joe, that you...
Sure. The early church was the Catholic Church.
Declarative sentence.
Pope Peter, it's not a declarative sentence, but it is
Peter.
Kind of a declarative title.
Yeah.
Didn't I title one of those? Didn't I come up with the early church was the Catholic Church?
Did you come up with that? I don't know.
I'm going to take
credit. I'm not keeping score of who comes up with stuff around here.
I'm going to take credit for that one.
I'll tell you what. You know, I think because of... Now, I'm going to be just very slightly political for a minute, but not about any personalities. I think because of the pro-life issue, a lot of people have associated faithful Catholics with the conservative movement in the United States. I think that's a mistaken identification, but I do think that identification is there. That said...
You have no idea how timely this is. I'm doing an episode on this next week on Seamus Popery.
What? I thought of something that at the same time you thought of it? That makes me feel so much better about myself.
Yeah, near proximity.
You guys, I must be smart.
You guys should get a friendship bracelet.
Let's get friendship. Yes. I actually don't get the reference of friendship. Is friendship bracelet just a thing?
I think it's a thing that, 13-year-old
preteen
girls.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the idea. There's a proposal that is going around to increase the child tax credit in the United States. I guess the child tax credit is $2,000 right now. I think it was like $43 when my kids were little. I'm so mad about this.
Actually, no.
No, it was better?
Well, go ahead. Can I go?
Can I go? Yeah, but what
this
did
is
I get
a topic
wrong?
Of great interest to me, and
yes.
And it's because I worked for many years with the author, Alan Carlson, from Rockford Institute.
Okay.
He was on a presidential commission. You're going to be shocked when I tell you who the president was, who signed the child tax credit into law. Because prior to this president signing it into law, all the child tax credit was for parents who were putting their children in daycare. So you got a tax credit if you put your kid in daycare, but if you were a married mom who stayed home and raised your children as a stay-at-home mom. You were penalized. You couldn't take advantage of the tax credit. And so Alan Carlson, who was on this presidential commission, said, all right, fine, continue to provide the tax credit for people who are putting their children in daycare, but why are you penalizing married couples who are mom is staying home to raise the kids? So it started at $500.
What year was that?
It was in the 90s, 97.
$500.
Bill Clinton.
Yeah, well, good for Bill Clinton, because he did the right thing. Yeah.
And then under one of the Bushes, I think the first Bush, it came up to about $2,000. So actually, I know when I was raising kids, so I'm a little bit behind you, but not much.
No, not that much.
There was a point where I think after John Paul was born, so number three, I mean, it might have been as much as 25 at one point or something, but we were so poor, we weren't even paying it. We probably were not even paying any taxes.
Yeah.
And one of the things Carlson argued was that in addition to this simply being just, and by the way, he was explicit. He said, and you want to make up the difference? Tax the wealthy who are not having children. Because why? Because in justice, it's going to be those of us who have had children and our children who are going to pay for their Social Security. So they should be taxed now. But he also said, if you look at initiatives like this through history, and he goes back to the 30s, and so they have a pronatalist effect.
One of the things that keeps people from having babies is fear of not being able to make it financially.
Yeah. So right now, when we're at 1.6 or something, not even the marital birth rate. If we did marital birth rate, it's got to be below 1 or 1.2 or something. It is way overdue. And by the way, $2,000 is not nearly enough. It ought to be 10. I am not kidding.
Well, that's what this proposal is to make it 5 per child. And I just couldn't be more in favor of that. I don't think there's any argument against it. What's the argument against the child tax credit being big?
Yeah, I don't know.
Darren's got 5 kids in there. He's doing the math. He's like, oh, $25,000. Yeah, okay. That's very good.
I don't know. The capitalists.
That's twice his salary.
The libertarians, the free market guys, they're against this. They're against this thing. They should not be.
Why? Joe, help me out with this. You know about bad ideas.
I mean, look.
Why would
We live in Missouri. It's Missouri's Senator Josh Hawley who proposed this.
Yes.
Oh, then I'm against it. Forget it.
We've got a bunch of kids. Well, we've got 3 kids right now, starter. And so yeah, I mean, I think the argument against it would just be, oh, some of the people this helps are middle class or upper class, and it's like, yeah,
it's designed to. In fact, it's designed to help them.
Well, wait, if you said there's a $5,000, or even if you said a $10,000 tax credit, do you think that, say, for example, a young woman who was having to make decisions about whether she's even going to continue the pregnancy is going to lean in favor of the child, or
because I don't think it's going to actually make a measurable effect there. I wish it did. But we don't see that in the numbers.
I think it's minimal. Yeah. Okay. But it is there.
I think it's actually more likely that people who are deliberating whether to get pregnant in the first place are not going to use NFP or contraception. Once someone is pregnant, tax credits are not usually on like the top 20 list of things that they're thinking about. But, you know, when you're trying to decide whether to become pregnant in the first place, financially planning for the future definitely does factor into that.
By the way, have the baby in December, because
we did
Nathaniel.
The first one is like, man, yes. But then the problem is on the other end, they turn 18, So it all probably works out in the end. It's better to get that tax credit early though. And that's why I think it should be big and early. Like the fact is the very age where we want people to have children, they don't have any money. So shifting the money towards young people who are having children seems to me like a great idea, just a perfect idea. Like
this is something where
at
government.
The 2021 NAPA conference, J.D. Vance talked about how we had this longstanding social conservative union with the free market types, but the major corporations and the libertarians don't really have your best interest at heart.
They do not.
From like a family perspective. No. Now, I think he's maybe walked some of those things back, but he was telling the truth when he said that.
Why do you think that is? Yeah. But look, first of all, some of my best friends are major corporations. So I'm not against major corporations.
We've seen the cups from your best friend on the...
Yeah, right. The Coca-Cola Corporation is my best friend in this world. Well, we hang out together every day. But the part of the argument I think that Josh Hawley makes, I'm not sure if he is one of the ones making this argument, but I know people, is that, look, you raise this thing to 5,000, you actually, it's not going to cost you 5,000, it's not going to cost you that extra 3,000 because it actually keeps some children out of poverty programs
yes.
that otherwise they would be stuck
yes.
in. And you're paying for all these programs when you could just be giving the money to the mom or to preferably the mom and dad. But do you see what I'm saying? In America, I know that in many cases, it's a mom.
Right. The citizens of a city pay about 40 grand a year for one homeless person.
Really?
Yeah. I think somewhere between 35 and 40 grand a year for one homeless person. So actually, if you are encouraging married couple families to have children, and this is a way to do it, you are, in fact, fighting homelessness. It's true.
Wait, how are you fighting homelessness? I'm confused.
Because a child who grows up in an intact married couple family.
Oh, is less likely to be a homeless child.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I know people don't like the word homeless. And I, you know what?
Unhoused.
This is what I feel like. This is not clear to me what the distinction is. People say to me, don't say homeless. I say, don't police my speech. I don't care what you think. It's a perfectly good word.
But
I'm so sick of people having to think, oh, you know what? That'll solve the problem. I'm not saying homeless anymore.
How is unhoused?
Oh, thank goodness you were here to clear that up.
How is unhoused different from
homeless?
How's
that better? Homeless isn't, there's nothing derogatory about the word homeless. If you don't have a home, Joe, do you want to correct me on this? I mean,
no.
You're very good with words.
I was just thinking that there's a whole wing of modern activism that is just this.
Linguistic.
It's shibboleth is the technical term for it.
That's not how you pronounce that. It's shibboleth.
Exactly. So it's having a word that like the in-group uses that the out-group doesn't know how to use. That makes you feel very special. So, and there's all kinds of practices that are built up along this. And the hallmarks of them are twofold. Number one, you've never heard of this unless you're like really in the cool crowd.
Yeah.
And number two, it never does anything for the marginalized group. It only makes you feel better about how cool you are.
Yeah, right.
So I, you know, having just defended Taylor Swift in the last hour, I was super annoyed when at one of her concerts, she did a land acknowledgement. Land acknowledgements are this absurd.
Well, that solved the problem. Oh, what are you talking about? Now that Taylor Swift did a land acknowledgement, the people who are native to this land are completely healed.
How far back did she have to go?
This is one of the things that drives me nuts.
Yeah.
If you listen to land acknowledgements, they'll list like four different tribes, and you're like, oh, did they all peacefully coexist? Or what happened there?
Why isn't it just one tribe
you're mentioning? And then you're like, oh.
Why is the last tribe always the Aztecs?
Tribe two, and then eventually.
The Mohawks. Yeah, right. The Apaches.
Why are the Navajo never the last tribe mentioned? I'm sorry. Stop policing people's language. It's you know what we're talking about. And the thing is, if you pay for the child, we don't have to have this debate because we won't need to use that word in terms of the child. And I think this is part of this conversation I wanted to have with the two of you because there is a secondary aspect to this, which is what is the role of government? Because there is an American strain of government that says, if men were angels, there'd be no need for government. That absolute minimum of governance or even an absence of government is always to be preferred. That is, first of all,
it's not Catholic teaching.
As Father Hugh pointed out to me, the angels do have a government.
Yeah.
St. Michael is the prince of the angels. So government is not just for sinners. We all need government. And there is a role for government in some of this stuff.
Is that James Madison?
James Madison said this is the dumbest thing he ever said.
No,
it's not the dumbest thing he ever said. But he was a very wise man, James Madison. But yeah. No, that's not right. Joe,
he built a really good stadium in New York, right?
You're the Joe
Square Garden or something.
Yeah, is that named after him?
I don't know.
I never thought about that. I love Dolly Madison, though.
That's what I was...
The cakes, though, not the woman. Joe, you're not going to get involved in this?
The answer is government has a role. They need to be active.
Yeah.
They need to be active and pronatalist. Yes, they do.
Let's talk about subsidiarity and solidarity. So we want to resolve problems at the most local level possible, but it's not just because of like government efficiency or something like this. It's because of two features. One, you're more likely to get the right fix for the problem at a local level. But two, and even more importantly, it's more intimate. It treats the other person as human. You know, like when you make dinner for your family, this is a more intimate and more human act than, say a national government just sending out packages of dinner in the mail.
Oh,
like you just can't replace that human interaction.
Is that what subsidiarity means then? That's what you're talking about? That's subsidiarity.
That's right.
And then solidarity.
So solidarity is sort of the coming together of people to take care of problems. So let me find the definition that it gives.
Could you wait just a quick minute? Because I got to.
Yes, I can.
I got to do the break. Catholic Answers Live. Chris Check is here. He's pronatalist. Joe Heschmeyer is here. He's actively still pronatalist.
Yes.
And I'm here. We're going to talk more about child tax credits when we come back. And then get into some more stuff, too, because we're talking about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. Have you ever wondered about the mysterious, even obscure aspects of the Catholic faith? Dive into the Jimmy Akin podcast, where Jimmy brings together information from many fields as he pushes the boundaries of apologetics. Tune in today to the Jimmy Akin podcast, Mysteries of the Faith, a highly entertaining, informative, and at times humorous show that will help you grow in your faith. Visit JimmyAkinPodcast.com today to subscribe.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers. And now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What was the church like in its infancy? In a word, Catholic. And Joe Heschmeyer has the receipts. In his best-selling book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, he gives you the details from the historical records of the first two centuries of Christianity. Right now, get a copy for just $10, plus free shipping if you live in the continental United States. Get more information and order The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at theearlychurchwascatholic.com.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
All right, I guess tax policy is kind of politics, but we're not talking politics. We're talking about policy. Policy, not politics. How's that? Is that a fair distinction?
The policy, role of government.
Yeah, we were talking about solidarity right before the break.
Okay, so
and just this, it's this recognition that you're not an individual monad, that we're all in this together, and that how we solve problems should recognize that. Like, if your house is on fire, I can't just be like, oh, that's a you problem. Because that's both a failure in Christian charity, but also just like a failure as a society, because eventually that fire is going to spread. Now, maybe that's a literal fire, or maybe it's something else. You know, it's like your family has broken down. That's not just going to impact you. It's going to impact your kids and everyone your kids come in contact with for the next generation. And so once you think about problems in that way, well, then there starts to become much more of a role for the collective to have more involvement, not in a way that contradicts subsidiarity, but that recognizes that we're all connected.
The problem is, I think we're getting so connected that it's almost like I think we're afraid of one another. I do think our last election was more of a fear election than a hope election. Our last few elections. I don't just mean the last one. The last few elections that we're afraid if the other side wins, we can't escape them. There's no, I don't know, go out on the Great Plains and have your own thing anymore.
I think I'm having trouble following you here, Cy. I think we're the most scattered and disconnected than ever.
But that we're not, though, in this sense, Chris. Okay. If you say what I said earlier on this program, I don't want children exposed to pornography, then people will respond, well, then don't look at pornography. Or I don't believe in abortion. Well, then don't have an abortion.
Yeah.
None of that will work because we're so interconnected now. And I'll just give you a very small example that I've used many, many times, but I'll just use it again. My son, 5 years old, learning to read, sitting in the back seat in the minivan, reading the sign on the side of the city bus, doing what a sweet little boy should do, sounding out the words, and it's an ad for the TV show Sex and the City, okay? So his innocence, I as a parent need other people to defend his innocence. I can't do the whole thing myself. That's what I'm saying, is we're so interconnected in that way.
Yes.
Because of our media, because of our all the tools we have.
Well, we're meant to live this way, connected.
Yes,
human persons are meant to live this way. And by the way, the American founders, their many problems and difficulties notwithstanding, did design a political system, if you will, rooted in, although the word hadn't been coined by that point, the subsidiarity that Joe is describing. And we've talked about that in the show before.
Federalism?
It was called federalism and state sovereignty. That saw the nail in the coffin at Appomattox. But that is what the founders had in mind.
Slavery was a distorting thing. But if we get far enough away from how badly distorted our society was by slavery, maybe we can have a kind of subsidiarity that's finally just... that. Doesn't even have the recollection of that anymore. Do you see what I'm saying? I think it got a bad association because states' rights, for example, was connected with slavery.
Sure. Well, I mean, we don't have states' rights anymore and we have abortion. So.
Well, I don't know about that because now it's up to the states to decide about abortion, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't really think the states operate... as sovereign entities in the way that they did prior to the war between the states. In fact, I know they don't.
Oh, no, that's certainly true. Because the federal government can always just say, we'll do what we want or we'll take your highway funding away.
There's no state
that will turn down its highway funding.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson, I don't know if Leo XIII read him or not, but there's harmony there.
I'm really surprised the guy that went to law school has nothing to say right now.
I'm taking
Are you bored with us?
I mean, the states' rights and the abortion rights thing are opposite in one sense, common in another, both in that the issue that comes in, you know, like women's rights is great. I'm in favor of women's rights. But once women's rights becomes a euphemism for abortion, it's like, well, now we part company. And so likewise, like states' rights are great. But if it becomes a euphemism for slavery, then we part company. And so on those issues, you know, and a good understanding of solidarity and subsidiarity also includes not treating your neighbor like chattel property.
So this conversation can't be held outside the context of scale. And Joe made this point without saying the word scale when he described subsidiarity as executing the business. That's a poor way to put it. Discharging the responsibility, whatever it is, at the lowest level of authority. So families, even though the church quite rightly describes them as an imperfect community because they can't provide for all that they need, that which can be managed by the authority of the father stays to the family and then extended family, clans, things of this nature. There is a point at which this scale becomes too scaled.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
I think that's right.
We're way past that. Frankly, in the size of the United States, and frankly, probably in the size of even the independent states.
Well, the thing is, people make fun of California for how poorly we're governed, but we're a state of 40 million people.
Right.
Like, it's too big.
It is too big.
Like, how are you supposed to govern that coherently?
The Archdiocese of Los Angeles is too big.
Oh, but you don't even get me started about archdioceses. You know how I feel about that.
Yeah, it's remarkable that the church has followed this trend of consolidation. Because it is, in fact, opposed to her thought.
Are we like old-fashioned small is beautiful people? Is that what we are, Chris?
I'm for human scale.
I mean, Italy, just on the diocesan thing, there are 225 dioceses in Italy. And Italy is much smaller than the U.S., and the U.S. only has 196 dioceses. Like, Italy has the second most dioceses of any country outside of Brazil. So there, you know, like, the way they're actually living Roman Catholicism near Rome is these really small, kind of city-level dioceses, where the way we're living it is often these large half-a-state kind of dioceses, where it's much harder to... Right. Yeah. And so the administration of anything becomes a lot more difficult there. I mean, if you think about every major city in the U.S., they're going to have problems that rural areas and suburbs don't have. And a certain level of mismanagement is just factored in at a certain size and scale because it becomes impossible to administer the city well.
I'm pretty sure it's in Aristotle or the Bible or both. If you can't walk across it in a day or two, it's too big.
That might be in the that reminds me of Nineveh.
Yeah, exactly. Because it took too long to walk across Nineveh. That's why I came.
That's
back
what the
back.
Problem was. Yeah, with
exactly.
The
See,
it wasn't
right?
all the immorality.
Joe, back me up with the scripture here.
I don't think you can.
You're the apologist.
I think that might be Aristotle.
I think it is Aristotle.
Well, I'll tell you what. I do want to move on to another topic, if I may. Yeah. Is that all right with you guys? I don't want to rush
you. Do you want to do mailbag?
I'll tell you what. Let's hold mailbag to after the next break. We'll get to mailbag. But I do want to invite people, if you have any comments about this show or anything else on the earth that you would like us to take up as a topic on Flannel Panel, just send an email to flannelpanel@catholic.com. flannelpanel@catholic.com. It's part of our new segment for Flannel Panel called Mailbag, of which the first instance will happen just moments away.
We should get a bag and have it made out of flannel.
Oh, Chris, this is why he's the boss.
Yes.
Who could have thought of that? Just made an idiot. What?
It's a mailbag.
Yeah.
Not a flannel bag.
It should be, but you can have
it's a flannel panel mailbag. I feel like we're discussing this for too long. I do want to get onto a serious topic. We talked last time about Nicaragua and the evil communist dictators in Nicaragua and the evil, evil, evil behavior towards the Catholic Church down there. Please, when you pray your rosary each night, include in your intentions the Catholics, all the people of Nicaragua, but certainly the Catholic bishops, sisters, priests of Nicaragua. But I want to talk for a minute about China, because we've been told for quite a while, you know what? Those Chinese communists, they may be bad, but Christianity, it keeps growing in China. Well, a new report says Christianity is not growing in China. I think the Chinese dictators are doing a pretty good job of oppressing religion, and it can be done effectively. I think one of the things that we think, this romantic notion we have is, oh, don't worry, it'll flourish. No, it won't. I mean, you could take a look at, Tito or Stalin or...
Mexico.
North Africa.
Mexico. North Africa. You can oppress religion to the point where people start to lose their religion.
And some places never come back, North Africa. Some things don't come back.
Right, North Africa, it's been more than 1,000 years. Well, I mean, it's still religious, but...
it's not Christian.
No, it's certainly not Christian. Although we do love our Coptic brothers and sisters, especially in Egypt. But so Measuring Religion in China is a new report that came out. It says Chinese Christianity stopped growing in 2010. We've seen, the Chinese communists taking steeples off of churches, putting people in jail, disappearing ministers of religions, abusing Catholic ministers, certainly. I know there's a great deal of controversy on what the Vatican's arrangements with the Chinese communists, but I have to plead I don't know on that because I don't understand Chinese politics at all.
And a lot of the arrangements are secretive.
Yeah, and that's right. I don't feel fully informed on that. But what do you guys say to this idea that, you know what, the communists are winning. They're not losing.
It's hard to say. I mean, one of the problems is we don't have any idea how many Christians are in China. It went from 2% of the population being identified as Christian to 1%, which is bad. But when we're dealing with numbers that small in a place where you can't really openly profess the religion, it is very difficult to know how many people we're talking about here.
Yeah, and everything's on the sly. A million years ago, I went to a UN conference on women in Beijing. This is way before I worked for Catholic Answers. And one of the most edifying experiences was a little coalition of people that formed in defense of life at this UN conference. And two people in particular, a very, very young couple, brand new marriage or infant child, were living in Harbin, which is a city in the northern part of China, on the sly, training people in natural family planning.
Really?
And this was their, this is the way they were evangelizing and spreading the gospel.
God bless them.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's as Joe says, I'm sure there's a lot of, continues today, a good bit of, underground evangelization. But I think you said the most important thing here, Si, and that is it's naive to think that governments can't
do real
stamp
harm.
Things out.
Real, yes. Genuine yep. harm. Yep. Yeah. And I don't know that it's something for other governments to address. I'm very skeptical of the idea that other governments can intervene. But I think
they easily can.
You think so?
What would be the case against? I mean, it could be as simple as if you continue to do these practices against Christians or even like Uyghur Muslims, we're not going to work with you on this other problem you're interested in working on. We're not going to give you the beneficial trade deals.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to like send troops to be, you know, like China is incredibly reliant upon exports for its economy. And, you know, like on things we care about, we will stand up and make threats. If we haven't done that here, I think the most likely reason is because we don't care about it enough.
No, yeah. We don't care about it.
Just earlier in the week, we heard about sanctions on Colombia because they wouldn't take their citizens back. How about sanctions on Nicaragua? And look, I'm not really necessarily a big fan of sanctions. I think there's moral problems with them. But how about the threat of sanctions on Nicaragua for the persecution of the church?
But I don't know this. I have to say, I don't know the situation of.
Maybe there already are.
Like, I would think there might be sanctions on Nicaragua from 1983 that are still in place. Yes. I don't know. Like, we're still sanctioning Cuba, and what more can you do? But it would be nice to hear the president or the vice president say something about Nicaragua. I mean, just say something about it.
This is something I would expect J.D. Vance to have said something about now.
Why shouldn't the president say something about it? Yep. Why shouldn't he say something about it? Let's take a quick break. We'll do mailbag when we come back. A new feature here on Flannel Panel. Flannel Panel Mailbag with Chris Check reading the mail right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Coca-Cola bought too much.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
I'm continually amazed and humbled at the way God can work through me to help so many people. Although I have no idea what the caller's questions will be that day, I trust that the Holy Spirit can use my education and experience to guide, challenge, or comfort those who call.
Mast Appeal with Colleen Kelly Mast, Saturday morning, 9 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
One of us or all three of us
first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's time for mailbag, but it looked to me like Joe Heschmeyer wanted to say something before we do mailbag.
Yeah,
did you have something to say, Joe Heschmeyer?
I did. So the data you were referring to earlier about the fact that the Christian population in China may have stopped growing after the rapid growth in the 80s and 90s. That's from Pew Research Center. And I think the important thing there is the may, because some of the, including some of the research they cite to in their own piece, they acknowledge that there's some stuff, even from like Chinese researchers, that would point to Christianity continuing to quietly grow. If you look at the sociological trends for the Roman Empire in the first 300 years of Christianity, Christianity grew at roughly, these are Rodney Stark's numbers, roughly 40% per decade. So if you have 100 Christians, then 10 years later you have 140. And if you can keep that rate of growth going over time, in the first couple generations, it looks completely hopeless. But as you keep going, it's like compounding interest, where literally by the 300s, you're in the tens of millions and hundreds of millions of Christians. And so China, when we're talking about 1 or 2% of the population, maybe 3%, that's out of a billion. And so that's still huge numbers of people coming to Christ. So it's easy to kind of disparage the size of the problem. But I think there are real signs for hope and real reasons to continue to take China very seriously as a mission field.
Well said, Joe. Is Rodney Stark still with us?
I believe he died a couple of years ago.
He is a brilliant demographer. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, he died in 2022.
Absolutely, first rate mind. Excellent book about the Crusades, by the way.
And you know what? All of Asia, there are massive evangelization opportunities, and there are people who are taking advantage of those opportunities. Maybe Catholics should remember when missionaries ask for your support, and they're in India or China or Japan or Vietnam or, you know the Asian. I don't have to list all the Asian countries. You know them. But
Cambodia.
We're not going to list all of them.
Thailand.
Consider. It's an opportunity to always supporting the missionaries is an opportunity to do what Christ has commanded us to do. Go and make disciples of all the nations. Let's do the mailbag, Chris.
And consider that they are over there at great personal cost. And all I want you to do is evangelize the lady at the checkout aisle at the grocery store.
All right, I'll do my best.
Yep. Mailbag.
Mailbag. Can we have the mailbag music, please? They're clearly not ready with mailbag music. That's the mailbag music. All right.
This is from Denise in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Thank you for your letter, Denise.
Dear Mr. Check, I am a fan, a supporter. Oh, I like her.
I like Denise.
And a faithful listener of Catholic Answers Live. I never miss an episode. My favorite is the flannel panel. That's where it ends.
I like Denise now, too.
That's where it ends. Yeah. No.
If only it had ended there, Denise.
I listened to the last episode of the flannel panel, and that is the reason for my letter. There are two topics I must address. First is dogs and strollers. Let me introduce you to my 17-year-old Dachshund Bunny, photo number one. Bunny is deaf and partially paralyzed. Without her stroller, she would not have a chance to venture out for a change of scenery. She loves getting in her stroller and walking to our church, and especially likes it when Father Phil is on his patio so we can stop and say hello. On the way home, we stop at Maria's, the ice cream stand on the corner, where she gets a special treat. You should not be giving your dog ice cream.
The dog is blind and paralyzed. Give it ice cream.
Pancreatitis. Pancreatitis, Denise. Without her stroller, Bunny would be a sad little weenie dog. Please reconsider your stand on dog strollers. I will not reconsider, Denise, but I
What was our stand on? Did we take a strong stand on dog strollers?
Yes.
As did 83% of our listeners.
Yeah, we said they're horrible.
However, dogs and strollers.
Denise, for you and for Bunny, photo number one, an exception. You make
No.
What?
Absolutely. You're on an island on this one.
What?
Dogs don't belong in strollers. I'll even go further.
Oh, careful what you say.
If you're going to say something,
stop.
I am scared what he's going to say right now.
Get the dump button
We're
ready.
Not.
Stop. I'm going on.
But take,
I am going Joe's... on. Denise is my friend, Joe, and you're about to make it.
Boy, that was about to turn really bad.
Second is Taylor Swift. I 100% agree with you about her music, exhibitionist tendencies, etc. I am not a Swiftie. I don't buy or listen to her music. However, let me introduce you to my great nephew, Ethan, photo number two.
Wait, that was the dog again.
No.
That's Ethan. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I thought we were still
Hold up, Ethan.
Wow.
Okay.
That's a sweet picture.
Ethan, photo number two. Ethan is 17-year-old and battling cancer. He receives treatment at Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City.
Kansas City!
A couple weeks ago, Taylor Swift spent over an hour at the hospital visiting sick children, including my great-nephew. Everything considered, you admit you have to give Miss Swift kudos for her humanitarian efforts. She certainly made this young today. Go to it, Miss Swift.
Yes, all right. So
yes.
Let's,
I remember when this happened where Taylor Swift went to Children's Mercy, and as someone who was treated at Children's Mercy when I was a child, and they saved my life, they do a lot of great work, and I was very glad she did this. And I know a lot of people who don't love Taylor Swift and were very happy that she was making kids.
I don't think we were saying we didn't love Taylor Swift.
And by the way, I saw.
Oh, I'm saying I know like people on Facebook friends and everything. This caused quite a stir when it happened.
I remain a fan and hold no adverse opinions. It's just that these two topics hit so close to my heart, I had to voice my opinion. Hello to the rest of the panel. Cy.
Hello.
And Joe.
Hello, Denise.
And everyone at Catholic Answers Live. I look forward to the next final panel, and I promise not to be so touchy. I like the way she signs it. To him through her. Denise.
Oh, beautiful. Nice. Denise, I'll tell you what, that
Denise,
letter was so good, Denise.
We're going to send you a prize.
Yes, we are going to send you a prize, Denise. And also, because that letter was as good as it was, we started a new feature called Mailbag, Flannel Panel Mailbag. So that's all because of you, Denise.
She's the foundress of...
You can now identify yourself as foundress
of Flannel Panel Mailbag.
I do think we were better to Taylor Swift this time than we were last time.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us has any interest in dogs and strollers, though. I don't... Also... Dogs in restaurants got really low marks.
And I'm against really dogs eating
ice
cream.
That's because they're bad cooks.
Do not give your dog ice cream.
I tell you what.
If they have cancer,
there's a certain point at which you can just give the dog ice cream.
High fat is not good for dogs. Pancreatitis.
But Denise, thanks very much for the letter. And if anyone else would like to send us a letter, a note,
a
comment.
I'm glad we're wrapping up on a hopeful note.
I know, and what a nice note from such a nice person. And it's a beautiful thing. Taylor Swift, okay, you got all the fame, you got all the money, you went to Children's Hospital. Good. That's what it's for, and good for her, and good for her. And I know there's also this thing where you can kind of depersonalize celebrities, where you treat them as an idea rather than as a person. And they're all people, except for Arnold Schwarzenegger. They're all people. And, I'm sorry, even Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I'll be back.
I saw a movie about that.
He's several people?
I'll be back.
People in the comments, both on Facebook and on YouTube, had very strong thoughts about ice cream for dogs in opposite directions. No. There was the don't give ice cream to dogs camp, give ice cream to dogs who have other illnesses camp. And one group that says they make ice cream for dogs. So
there is an occasion when you want to give ice cream to a dog.
When they're going over the Rainbow Bridge?
No. Oh. No, it is when you have a female who is in whelp, who is delivering babies.
Oh, yeah, female in whelp.
Can we put a content advisory on this episode?
Because
he said a female in whelp right on the air.
That the dairy or whatever stimulates the contractions.
Really?
Yep.
All right.
We give vanilla ice cream to our spaniels when they are whelping litters.
Well, I don't. Is Bunny a boy or a girl? I don't know if we found.
It
oh no, it's a girl.
Not be
it's
a boy.
Girl. Yeah, it's a girl.
I was stunned when I found out the musical artist Bad Bunny is a boy. Isn't that right?
Well, there's a musical artist named Nelly that's a boy. Isn't Nelly a girl's name? He played at the inauguration.
This is now the dumbest conversation.
He played at the inauguration.
This is now the dumbest conversation.
I mean, I got to say, his music is not good. It's not morally good music. Yeah. It's bad.
I mean, yeah.
It's morally bad. There's a lot to be hopeful out there, my friends.
All right. So what are you hopeful about? Give us one hopeful thing before we go, Chris, and then you give us one hopeful thing, Joe.
I'm filled with hope because I know that the staff of Catholic Answers are conduits of knowledge, but we're also conduits of grace because we cooperate with the Holy Spirit to bring the fullness of the truth to countless people that we're going to meet one day.
That's beautiful. Joe,
but it's true. True.
Yeah,
it's true.
It is. I don't know, but I liked it.
Yeah, related to what I said before with the growth in China, the spiritual multiplication is a thing. So you don't have to change the whole world. Just change a few people and help bring them to Christ and also give them the tools to bring others to Christ. And the effect multiplies in a way that's almost unimaginable.
We're here to help.
I have to say, my main hope is all these Catholic young people I've met in the last month. God has blessed me with this opportunity to meet Catholics in their 20s, 30s, teens. And there's a lot of them, very smart, very much on fire, just good people. And there's more than 12 of them. And so that means that, that bodes very, very well for the future. I also have a great deal of hope because well over 80% of our listeners do not want dogs in restaurants, which means there is still sanity in this world. Joe Heschmeyer, thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
My pleasure.
Check out Joe's podcast, Shameless Popery. He is a shameless papist and a really good podcaster. Shameless Popery at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcast. Chris Check, 10 years, standing ovation. Yay, bravo, bravo, Chris.
God reward you, Si.
That'll do it for us. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.